Welcome, everybody. Today we're here with something special. We are just
Woo!
here to talk about our love of comics. This is a bit of a bonus episode. Haven't done one of these in a long time. We're just here to
Yeah.
chill, talk, and have a good time.
Yeah,
And
we've.
make pop culture references that Ryan doesn't understand. But that happens every video, so. Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
it
but I'm still
really
going to bury
does.
you for
Yeah,
it.
it really does. I has anybody seen the trailer for the new Exorcist yet? I
Yeah.
don't know if we brought that up
I didn't know
before,
there
but
was a new Exorcist, so.
oh boy, it looks good. They brought back a couple of original cast members, everything. It looks
It
so
looks
good.
really good, and I don't trust it because I've been
Yeah.
hurt so many times by the Exorcist franchise.
Oh boy. Yeah. Dominion wasn't bad.
You're not
I
like
mean,
Jeffrey Dahmer and watch Part 3 every night and get in your zone.
well, the Exorcist
Part 3 was the only good one
Part
after the
3
first.
was a unique film in and of itself. They filmed it twice and then decided to use bits with Brad Dourif in it that they hadn't originally intended to use.
Brad Dourif rules.
Oh, he does.
Yeah,
And
he's
it
very good.
was, with the, in my opinion, it was probably the best performance he's ever put in a film. He was
I should probably
terrifying.
watch this at some point.
Oh, well, you need to watch the first one to understand
Yeah, you need to watch one, and then you can completely ignore two because it has
it.
nothing to do with anything.
No, number two is completely pointless.
It literally just has the Exorcist name as an effort to sell it.
It was put out in an attempt to capitalize on the popularity of the first film.
It's like Super Mario Brothers 2. It's not actually anything to do with anything else in the franchise.
And it's actually kind of odd when you have a lineup with James Earl Jones, Richard Burton, people like that in a film, you'd expect it to be at least reasonably well thought out, but boy, oh boy, was it a waste.
Yeah, I
Just.
watched it on the assumption that even if it wasn't a good Exorcist film with the cast, it was probably a good movie.
Oops.
I was wrong.
Oh yeah.
I was very
Yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, it was like going into Captain America and the Winter Soldier thinking, "Hey, first one was so good and they've got the same cast. This might be worth watching." Oh boy, was I wrong.
And this tells us so much about Dan.
What, I have taste and you don't? Oh, that's right. We already figured that one out. We knew that. We
My dude,
knew
you're
that.
wearing a hat from a like 30 or 40 year defunct hockey team that wasn't very good when they existed. Yeah, who the hell supports a team from Quebec?
Billy Smith. Screw both of you. Yeah. Go ahead. Argue with me.
I would as soon as I figure out who Billy Smith is. Yeah, that's my issue.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm doing a podcast with children. This is
Aw.
just
I
okay.
mean,
Yeah, what?
what was it like when the Golden Age came about?
The golden age
Yeah, of
of
comics.
the worst part is he thinks he's funny.
Oh,
Oh.
okay. He played hockey.
Yeah, that's why I
I
mentioned him.
figured that
Good, Bill. Wow.
Yeah, hang on,
You're
hang
on the
on.
ball, buddy.
He
Bill, you're
played
making me look
hockey
good.
before I was born. Up until I was seven.
So did Rocket Richard, but you know who he is.
No.
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
I've heard of Rocket Richard.
Oh my God, Brian.
I don't actually really pay attention to hockey either. Get the fuck out of our country. You don't even have to follow
Yeah.
hockey to know who Rocket Richard is.
Wow. That's just, I mean, we got some genuine Canadian sports heroes. Rocket Richard's one of them.
Yeah, Terry Fox.
Terry Fox is another.
I'm not even
You
going to
know.
make a snide comment about that because you're right. That's
I
my
was going
hero.
to roast whatever you suggested, but you played But,
the Terry Fox card, now I
yeah, you
can't.
win. Now, Terry Fox is legitimately probably one of the greatest sports heroes of any era.
Doesn't even
You
need the
know.
word sports because No,
he
he doesn't. wasn't He's just
really
a
an
he.
athlete.
No,
That's
he's
part
just a
of why what
hero.
he did was so great. Yeah, but no. On a completely unrelated note,
Well,
Wolves
we've been doing
managed
that
to
whole
fuck up
podcast
their
so
game
far.
today. No, you guys managed to bollocks your game up, right? You d a draw with Luton. That's humiliating.
Yeah, That's not good.
That's just humiliating. How do you draw Luton? Right? I mean, oh.
And it's a 1-1 draw, which is actually worse than a 0-0 draw.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because, like, you guys took a red card for no reason. Right? Still managed to score and then decided, oh, maybe we didn't want to play this game. We'll let Luton have one. Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when I see the highlights for that. I'm wondering how.
Oh, I just watched.
Normally,
them.
I'd be like, you held a draw with a red card in like the 36th minute. That's pretty good. But not when it's Luton.
No, Luton should have won. I'll tell you that right now. They completely outplayed the Wolves. They just tore apart the Wolves' defense about half a dozen times. The Wolves' goaltender was the only thing keeping them in that match.
Right. Oh, God, so, that's not a good sign.
No, it was not. I mean, they're the kind of team that you'd expect Manchester to win against the way they were playing.
City, right?
Nice hat, by the way. and make Manchester great again, isn't it? Is that what that says? Just asking.
Inga.
That was Inga. One of the things that sucked the most.
When you first bought it, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I bought the hat, and it turns out United Red and Trump Red are basically exactly the same color.
Yep. They are, and that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, it was a legit hat. Like, it's
a
nice hat.
I mean, I'm not going to not buy a hat for my club just because a bunch of mouth-breathing idiots from down south have ruined the color.
Yeah. How you doing, Ryan?
Great.
You're awful quiet.
We did just roast them about Luton for like 10 minutes.
Well, 5 minutes, be fair. Five.
Yeah, you're right. Still, we still need to roast some more.
We do, but I'd be perfectly
Spread
honest.
It right.
Well, yeah, right? I was just gonna say I'm gonna wait till later when they think I've forgotten. And then bring it back up.
Well, Ryan, the beauty of all this right now is there are a lot of Manchester United fans out there very quietly not mouthing off. Okay? They have a match today against a team that they should not lose against. It should be a guaranteed freaking win for them. And yet they're all very quietly going, oh, it might be a good game.
Who are we playing today?
Okay,
Burnley.
Yeah, you know, one of the teams in relegation right now.
Yeah, we should beat them.
Yeah, but all of a sudden...
I will say it. We should beat them.
You're
and if we
don't... Manchester fan who said that. Seriously.
Yes, because I tried to actually be honest about the team, even if I get... even if things go badly.
Well, yeah, I mean, you should beat them. I mean, I should be the one who's worried. West Ham is a legitimately good team this year, and we need this win to stay in the top. And West Ham is a team that could kick the crap out of us.
And you did not look good in that first half against Lask, I gotta say.
No, we did not.
I was expecting you to just go in and body them because I don't think Liverpool should be in the Europa League.
Well, whether we should be in the Europa League or not, there's no way Lask should have gotten the friggin' goal.
And that whole first half, like, I watched the highlights of that match. Yeah. That first whole half, you did not look like the better team.
No, we weren't the better team. We weren't. I hate to say it out loud. Now, in the second half, we came out and just dominated.
Oh, yeah. That's what I thought the whole match was supposed to be like.
But the first
half... There's a reason I didn't watch the highlights until this morning, because I thought it was going to be one-sided and boring.
to be fair, Klopp put out a lot of the younger players to start. Yeah. Right, he didn't play all his big names for the first half.
No, Casella didn't come on until like the 80th minute.
Yeah, he subbed them on afterwards, like after the first half. But yeah, it was not the best game of our lives. Now, playing against West Ham, we're going to have a good game.
Yeah.
These guys are going to come out and kick the crap out of us if we don't show up.
Yeah. Right? And I'm actually feeling all right going into this match because we did get 3 against Bayern Munich, which I wasn't expecting us to be able to do.
Yeah. Considering how badly you guys played, I'm shocked that you scored anything. Because you guys played terrible.
We did.
It was a horrible game for Man U. Right. You shouldn't have had gotten three. You might have gotten one that you deserved.
Yeah, the fact that we kept it close against Munich and should have drawn if there wasn't one of those really soft Champions League penalties.
Yeah.
Because that handball wouldn't have been... The commentators were right. That wouldn't have been a penalty in the Premier League.
No.
I can't be mad about them getting it in the Champions League because it's always called that way. There was a super soft penalty like that in your match as well.
Yes, there was.
But so it's just always called that way. But still, like if that was under Premier League rules, we would have drawn them. And that's pretty good for a team that I was expecting to beat us. Because my thought coming into this round of the Champions League is we can probably beat Copenhagen and Galatasaray and get second. I reached this conclusion before the last couple of United matches.
You reached this conclusion when you were on peyote is what you did.
It was a good trip, man.
I explains the red hat. Wow. But no, I don't think there's any chance you guys win in that game to begin with, so.
Yeah, no. So the fact that we kept it close was actually pretty good, especially the way we were playing.
I got so high, I was seeing Man U W's.
But anyway, beyond that, I wanted to bring up the Blue Beetle. As we were talking about earlier, I just wanted to mention what I said to Bill was... it's actually not that bad a film.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about this on air.
No, we didn't. And Blue Beetle was not that bad a film. It's pretty standard fare for a superhero movie lately. You know, it's kind of everything you expect to happen happens. Like, there's no real surprises, but it was a good cast. Mostly unknowns, people I'd never seen before.
And that can actually help a movie like that.
I think it did help it a lot. But it kind of played out exactly the way I thought it would. There was some good action, some good special effects, a decent story without being particularly overwhelming. You know,
but did it have a giant spider?
Nothing clever about it. It doesn't need a giant spider. Who are you, David Arquette? No, you wouldn't get that reference either, would you?
Yeah, he's never gotten a WCW World Championship.
I haven't.
Yeah, okay.
I got Dan on the reference.
Wow. No. Anyway, as promised, I'm going to bring up a movie that we all liked that does not get enough love. And I know why, because when I rewatched it last the other night, I did see a lot of the problems with it because I was watching it from a more critical viewpoint as opposed to just watching it for the sheer entertainment of it. And there are a lot of problems with the film.
It's not objectively a good movie, but I like it.
No, the acting's atrocious. But Power Rangers from 2009, I think?
I
don't remember when it came out.
Newer than that, isn't it?
It must be newer than that.
Yeah, it must be
newer than that.
It's like
2019. I got Google.
I fought 2018 in my head, but...
Oh, yeah, maybe 2018. I can't remember when it came out.
I don't think it's that.
It might be a little older than that, but it's not... It's like 2015 would be the oldest. No, 2017. There it is. It's 2017.
Okay, 2017.
I was close.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. First time I saw it, I had a blast. I thought it was so much fun. There were a lot of fun little callbacks to the TV series. They did a lot of the same sort of foolish fun that the TV series did. The characters they used to populate it were decent. There were no real huge stars, but it was a fun movie. I really, really liked it.
One of the girls stood out to me when I first watched it, but...
And probably Naomi Scott. Probably. She's been in a number of films since. Right, she's been fast-tracked to stardom. Right. She's the one who played the Pink Power Ranger.
Yeah, I think it was... That might be it.
Yeah, she's been in, I think... she played Jasmine in the live remake of Aladdin. She was in Charlie's Angels, stuff like that. She's a good actress. Very, you know, she's definitely got talent.
Despite the quality of the movies you used to cite her career.
Yeah, her agent needs a bitch slap, but she's definitely talented. But no, I thought the Power Rangers movie was a lot of fun.
No, I enjoyed it when I watched it in 2017.
That's the last time I saw it, too. I want to watch it again, but I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, me neither.
When we brought it up the other night, I went back and watched it that night and really enjoyed it.
Now that we've bonded on liking it, watch me hate it the second time around.
I wasn't expecting to like it the first time, which I think really helped it.
Well, see, I went into it wanting to like it.
I went into it assuming it would be very similar to the TV show, and it wasn't. Like I said, there were a lot of callbacks, but it was really updated.
Yeah, I went in expecting like a Michael Bay Transformers, so it was kind of a how bad is this going to be?
Yeah, and it really wasn't a Michael Bay Transformers.
No, and that definitely helped my liking it.
Yeah, well, it was a lot more character driven than I was expecting.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot less of the superhero antics and a lot more of a, you know, a character study of, you know, five kids who normally would never get along. Right, who normally wouldn't have anything to do with each other, who kind of get stuck in a difficult situation.
It's the Breakfast Club with giant robots.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that.
I'm being sarcastic, Dan.
Yeah, so we see. It doesn't suit you. Right, that's my job when it comes to talking about your football team. Just say it.
You're sarcastic? You usually just straight out say they suck.
I do. You're right. And I'm so ashamed of it. But, let's go... We were going to talk about the comics. We were going to talk about...
Yeah, that is the point of today's
episode.
That is
kind of the point of today's
episode.
We're
here to talk about our love of comics and how we've gotten here.
And how did we get here? And part of that is going to be how we all ended up working at a comic shop.
Well, that's where I was going to go first, is how we all met. Is that we all ended up working at the same comic shop.
What?
So then that's how we started bonding. Hi.
Hi, sorry.
No, I was just saying, we all were working at the same shop, and then that's how we started bonding. It was a comic shop.
Yeah, but it all went further back than that.
Definitely.
For all of us.
That's just how we all came together.
Well, it's more important to my comic story, I think, than yours. Because before I worked there, I was a casual consumer of comics. I'd buy them for a while, fall off, buy them for a while, fall off. It was only once I started working there that I started really collecting.
Hmm. Yeah, I started collecting before comic shops were really a thing. Right, you know.
At least
rural
around
Nova
here.
Scotia, well, yeah, rural yeah. Nova Scotia, you're not going to find a comic shop back in the 70s. You know, and I think we had Odyssey 2000 in Halifax. That was about it. And, you know, we were buying them off the rack.
And, I mean, that was my same experience in the 90s, was just, you know, go and buy an X-Men off the rack or a Spider-Man.
Yeah, and you'd buy it.
And nothing else, because it's the 90s.
Well, the thing was, you know, back in the 70s, you'd buy a title, you know, and then just hope that the local drugstore would bring in the next issue off it. You didn't know if they would or not, so
yeah.
Collecting was, it was really, really a coin toss as to what you'd get your hands on. You know, it was just whatever ended up on that spindle rack, right?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty pleased I managed to get all of the Onslaught event off of racks in various stores.
Nice.
I mean, it's not a good event in hindsight, but I was like 12 or something when it was happening, so it was cool then.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was probably, I mean, back then you had, I'm sure everybody knows the Archie Digest that you can buy.
Of course, I have a big tangent on.
Yeah, back then you could buy like the Disney digests, you know, there's kind of pre-DuckTales stuff like that, but you still had some really fun stories when we were little, you know, and my parents would pick one up at the grocery store and bring home and keep us quiet for a while. Right. But that's kind of started it. And I remember, I couldn't for life me tell you what the first title was I ever really bought for myself, but I can remember sort of this brilliant era of comics where Jack Kirby was working with DC at that point. The Legion of Superheroes was finally starting to come into its own. The art was really starting to mature. They were getting away from the 60s, the 50s, 60s style art, and into art that was a little more realistic. Right, John Byrne was slowly becoming, you know, a name. Neil Adams was doing Batman.
When Neil Adams was good.
Joe Kubert was doing more than just the covers for Sergeant Rock. He was doing Tarzan, stuff like that. Right, you know, it was just, you know, Garcia was out there. You know, their titles were beginning to be good. You know, we were getting away from the family-friendly, you know, Superman Digest with stories from Supergirl and Krypto and Jimmy Olsen. You know, a lot of that stuff was starting to die off as they went into more serious titles like Brave and the Bold. You know, and it was just a brilliant era to start collecting in.
I mean, the shift from the Silver Age to the Bronze Age is an absolute massive one in comics.
It really is, and I've always kind of been annoyed that they call it the Bronze Age, because it was a brilliant time to start collecting. You know, there was
I think it's
so
one of the best
titles.
Times for the top comics.
Yeah.
I have to specify, because it's also when both comic companies were really expanding their lineups a lot. And so an awful lot of Absolute Direct got published then.
But the
top stuff took a massive leap forwards.
Yeah, again, you know, Mike Grell was out there doing Warlord, doing Green Lantern. You know, and I mean, he was just bringing a whole new ball game onto the pages with his art. You know, Jack Kirby was finally found his stride as a writer. You know, and he was doing things like Commandy, you know, stuff like that. And it was some really good stuff came out back then.
I wish he had managed to keep it when he came back to Marvel.
I don't think he was given any latitude when he went back to Marvel.
Oh, they let him do whatever the hell he wanted.
And what did we get out of that?
Absolute
Captain America. And
Marvel,
let's be honest,
literally
Jack
didn't. He wrote, he edited, and he drew his own comics when he came back to Marvel, because the only way they could get him back was to just let him do whatever he wanted. And
yeah,
I think actually the
Eternals.
Lack of oversight was the problem, that there was no one to keep him on the rails, so he just went off and did whatever he wanted with no concern for continuity or anything, and it showed how outdated his storytelling was.
I also think a problem with Jack Kirby and coming back, and he's doing like Captain America and he has Black Panther run, he's writing these more grounded heroes, when in reality the stuff he's best at is the more out there concepts, like a Commandy, the last boy of the future, like the New Gods.
That is fair, because Eternals is definitely the least shitty of his Marvel Return.
The Eternals was great. I love the Eternals. I thought he did a fantastic job.
I hate it, to be honest. And it's not tainted by what he did to Captain America and Black Panther, because I hit Eternals first, and it just felt really dated to me compared to like what a Claremont or what an Englehart or so is doing. And then you've got Jack Kirby telling this story that's right out of 1964.
Well, interestingly enough, you talk about it, but what Kirby was doing with Commandy at that point in time, you know, right the heart of the Cold War, was pretty standard fare. Commandy was a comic that would have happened. If he hadn't done it, somebody else would have.
Definitely, because Marvel was putting out the same sort of stuff.
Yeah, you know. And, I mean, there was... I can't remember the artist who did Star Hunters. But you had titles like that were they were starting to sort of stretch themselves and do something a little more unusual. They were looking over at 2000 AD, you know, out of Britain, going, wow, you know, these guys are doing some really, really crazy stuff. Right? And why, you know, we need to start trying to do stuff like that, like, because Judge Dredd, Tank Girl, you know, some of this stuff was really, really good. And I think both Marvel and DC realized it was time to, you know, it was time to expand what they were doing.
Yeah, because that was the era that got us, like, the original Guardians of the Galaxy, which was
a disappointing moment in our lives. I mean, it was great, great time, great time.
Don Newton.
Oh, Don Newton. Yeah, Star Hunters.
Yeah,
he was.
I just wanted to give the proper shout out if we were going to mention him.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Don Newton. Star Hunters was a strange little title.
Yeah, I really liked it. I saw it had like a 7-issue run.
Yeah, it didn't go far, but I mean,
a lot of those dare ideas. Even the ones that are, like, looked back on fondly now, weren't popular in the time.
No, they weren't, and I was absolutely devastated when Star Hunters got canceled, because I was really enjoying it. It was a lot more hardcore. Yeah, but I think there was another one, Doomsday Plus One or something.
Yeah, I think you said that one before.
Yeah, that was a great title that never got it. I think it was mostly because Carlton was printing it that it never really, you know, got good release. But it would have been a great title if Marvel or DC had picked it up.
I don't know. I could see it not doing a lot better in those, because, like, the original Swamp Thing, I think that's the Marvel one. I always get them confused.
Man-Thing is the Man-Thing. Marvel one.
Man-Thing's Marvel.
The names are so similar, I always get them mixed up. But Man-Thing by Steve Gerber was a brilliant little comic. And it only made it, like, 15, 20 issues before it got canceled. And it was constantly getting delayed because, like, people weren't buying it.
Huh. I don't think people bought into Swamp Thing either, so, to be fair.
Yeah. You look back on it, and I think what was happening was it was kind of ahead of its time, because it was almost like in a little, like, episodic story with just the Swamp or Man-Thing being there to tie them together, but he doesn't really have agency. He's just there observing these random weird stories that Steve Gerber came up with.
Yeah, I guess. Kind of like one of the events from when I started collecting that I'll never forget is buying the first Star Wars comic.
1977,
yeah, before the movie actually hit Canada, I think. I bought the comic, and I think I was probably 3 weeks before the movie hit the theaters here in Canada. And the art was atrocious. It was just horrifyingly bad. But the story was fun, and it was enough to prompt me to want to go see the film. But it was, you know, I think Kirby was did 2001, but Marvel started doing movie adaptions.
Yeah,
and they were really, really starting to hit some of these films that were coming out, and that was another sort of big step forward for comics.
Marvel had the foresight of properties before they completely dropped the ball on it, but
yeah, because they had like the Godzilla.
Right, they were doing everything. They had an Indiana Jones comic.
Star Wars, they had Indiana Dark Jones. Man. Rom was a tie-in. Yeah. They had Samurai Warriors or something was a tie-in to a toy line that was popular at the time. Mm. They did the Human Fly, which was a tie-in to a real-life stuntman.
Oh, yeah. I think DC did.
Don't look
did
that one up if you things. Haven't read it. It's universally terrible and probably hurt his career.
Yeah,
they definitely tried.
Yeah, G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I'm not sure the ones that aren't tied into the 616, like Godzilla, Human Fly, Rom, Samurai Warriors, those all got tied into their existing properties as well.
Hell, Marvel had Transformers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and boy, didn't they beat the crap out of that.
They sure did.
That was.
I mean,
horrible.
Just like G.I. Joe, though.
Yeah, well,
and that was less Marvel. That was more the 80s.
Yeah,
because
G.I.
I mean, the
G.I.
Joe TV show and the Transformers TV show and so were just 30-minute ads for toys.
They were. They were. What was the other one? There was Transformers. What was the other version of that?
GoBots?
GoBots, yeah.
IDW was printing comics for those the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of that stuff. But Jim and the Holograms, E-Man,
I think
Brave
they just
Star.
Brought Jim back again.
Jim, IDW also has Jim, I think.
Yeah, it's IDW that has it. IDW has kind of become the licensed comic company.
They've kind of taken over for Dark Horse for that. Dark Horse was that company for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, Dark Horse took on a lot of properties, Aliens, Predator, Terminator.
Dark Horse has started doing more of original stuff than they were.
They kind of needed to, because you can only go so far with movie properties.
Well, Marvel started buying their properties back, and they kind of needed to because they'd relied on that stuff for so long, and they realized there's value in a library of their own too, because they started getting deals with Umbrella Academy and all this stuff.
And just realizing that, you know, another company can buy out your property and you just have nothing left because you have to renew it. I think they realized it when Marvel got Conan.
Marvel got Conan, and then they ended up getting Predator and Alien. So they took a big chunk of their library. They got Star Wars back to begin with. That was the first big hit.
IDW powered, or not IDW, Dark Horse powered through that one pretty good, but it was when they lost Conan that it really hurt them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, Conan was, Marvel did justice to Conan.
I can't think
for a
of
while.
A company that's had a bad Conan.
Right. That's one of the sword and sorcery subgenre of science fiction that, It's got an audience all its own.
Yeah.
Right. And, I mean, we've seen that working at the comic shop where there were, you know, people my age coming in looking for the oversized Conan magazines all the time. Right. And Jim always had a stack of them, and people always bought them. They were always trying to fill out their collections. So, you know, it was an entirely different market.
Yeah, a lot of those guys aren't even, like, mainstream comic guys. Mm. They just want the Conan stuff.
Yep. Right, and it was the same with Star Wars. So a lot of people have bought Star Wars comics.
Yeah,
didn't
or I was
going to
say
comics.
Spawn.
Oh,
Spawn
yeah.
has
yeah,
its,
we
his
haven't
own...
even gotten into Image it, and Spawn Indie has, stuff yet.
Spawn has his own little market, too, that a lot of people that read Spawn comics don't read anything else.
That's very,
very much
very
so,
true.
And
yeah.
especially over the last 5 or so years, there was a big resurgence of Spawn.
That's a bit. It's.
Yeah.
Well, because I know the movie was a disaster.
Yeah, well, it had a big resurgence because people were getting excited as it was hitting like issue 300 or whatever, and it was like these great Spider-Man homage covers were coming out. For variants and stuff, and it, people just the sales of Spawn shot through the roof for a while. It like not just in our shop, like generally, Spawn became one of the best selling titles again out of nowhere.
Yeah, in our shop, we only had like 2 people that bought Spawn.
Yeah,
for a while, we had a jump when the rest
More
of the world
than
had a jump.
I either wasn't working there anymore when that happened, or just they never came in when I was working.
Yeah, you worry, but you would be oblivious to it with the just Sunday stuff.
Yeah, but anyway, for my era, like, you know, in the 70s, comics just really came into their own. It was a wonderful time to collect, right? There were so many great titles out there.
Yeah, like Tomb of Dracula.
Ragman.
One of those is actually good. Spoiler, it's not the one I've read.
But they were trying a lot of stuff they hadn't tried before.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Luke Cage, stuff like that. Like,
oh, I fucking love Luke Man Cage.
Rules. Luke Cage is awesome.
Luke right, Cage was one of the biggest positive surprises I've had reading The Order.
Yeah.
Because I haven't even read it for myself, but just...
Going into encountering it reading The Order, I'd only ever read Luke Cage when he showed up in another comic, and they'd never get him right.
Yeah.
He'd just be token black man, and his entire personality would be black.
Yeah.
And so it was... always terrible, and so I figured his comics probably sucked because he always sucked when he showed up in other people's books.
No, his comics were fairly good.
Oh, I fucking love Luke Cage. They've but been be so fair, much fun.
The Iron Fist comics weren't that bad either.
Iron no, Fist is also good really good.
Right, when the that Fist really kind of hit its own, it was fun to read. DC had sort of done their Karate Kid thing. And it had just failed miserably. But Iron Fist was just a whole different animal. It was just so much fun to read.
Iron Fist might be one of the Marvel characters that's fallen off the hardest in terms of where he was to where he's...
Because he was really good. Like, Shang-Chi was also really good.
Yeah, Shang-Chi was really good at the time, too.
They propped it up with spy stuff.
They did.
Like, it wasn't that good until he started doing spy things. And then it was more like a spy comic that he'd also hand-to-hand fight in.
Yeah.
So you got the Nick Fury experience.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so
not in a good way.
People joke about it being agents of K-U-N-G-F-U because it's basically just the old Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic, only with Shang-Chi in it. Yeah, and it not being S.H.I.E.L.D., it's a different organization, but it's the same sort of stories.
Yeah. But
Iron
anyway,
Fist
that's
stuck
where I'm
to
at.
The martial arts formula and it worked.
It did. I mean, there were other martial arts comics out there, but...
There was, but at least on the Marvel side, they were awful. Because there was stuff like Sons of the Tiger.
Yeah, and I mean, at that point, DC had some spectacular failures, like I said, The Karate Kid, Ragman, Isis... you know, they just had this running series of titles they were trying out. None of them were any good.
That was the 70s, though. Throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Both companies expanded massively and didn't really know what to do with the new stuff.
Yeah, but they did have... my favorite crossover was Brave and the Bold. I loved what they were doing with it. Right.
That is such a good title.
Right. It was a really nice experience to be able to sort of pick one of those up because you could get a taste for certain characters that you weren't normally reading, you know, and you know, when they crossed Green Lantern, Green Arrow, put them together, that was another fun thing that they did, take two sort of marginally popular characters and, you know, put them together as a team up, and
that is a historic run that still stands up to
a lot of fans. Just different. It was different, you know.
I mean, good old Speedy.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a story.
Yeah,
that
well,
was
Teen
very
Titans.
Important.
Yeah, Teen Titans was another title that kind of came out in that era that was...
That was like 82, I think, when it started.
Something like that, yeah. And it was a lot of fun. Right. They did. It was very character-driven as well. Right, the bad guys.
Well,
you
that's what I like
them.
From comics. I'm not just reading comics for the action. I want character development. And
you got a lot of that. Like, bad guys suddenly stop just being some wacko in a funny costume with a weird name who just magically appears to challenge the good guy. And it went to, you know, like characters like Terra and Deathstroke who, you know, had backstories, who were villains by default, not by default, but because they'd been driven into that.
Yeah.
You know, especially Tara, she wasn't a bad guy by choice. You know, she was being manipulated. And
she ends up being a good guy.
Well, theoretically, yes. And Raven, you know, kind of, you know, had her own little story arc there. You know, like everything about the Teen Titans at that time was different. It was all about character. You know, Nightwing, you know, throwing off the Robin persona.
Yeah, Dick Grayson becoming his own person and his own character in Nightwing.
That's a cool
transition.
You saw it in Legion of Superheroes as well, where they just went from all these, you know, sort of space-age superheroes in the future who joined together and just all having weird powers to suddenly having personalities now and, you know, having problems and having to deal with so much stuff beyond being superheroes.
That's really, I think, the change that the Bronze Age brought about, because, like, in the Silver Age, Marvel tried to do more character-driven heroes, but they didn't really get how to do it, and they were still trying to stick to the comic formula of restoring the status quo either at the end of that story or within two or three issues of the problem arising.
Yeah.
So they'd never really commit to any character growth.
Yeah.
But then when you tick over to the Bronze Age, all of a sudden, like, something changes, and it just sticks. And it's like that for years, if not permanently.
Yeah, well, first of all, better writing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it was one of the things where there is no longer Villain of the Week.
Yeah.
With generic plan to take over the world. It was, you know, villains who had a chip on their shoulder. They had a grudge to, you know, to hold. Anti-heroes became more of a shtick than they ever had been before. I mean, Hulk had been pretty much the biggest anti-hero out there.
And, Hulk, I wouldn't even call an anti-hero.
Well, like of that era, you know, like pre-80s.
The only one I think that could be defined as an anti-hero is Namor, because he would periodically decide to conquer the human race before immediately getting sidetracked by something that required him to save humans. Hulk didn't like people,
Sue Storm's boobies or something.
Yeah. Ooh. Like, Hulk always made a scene about not liking people, but he'd never actually commit to it. I'm not going to give you the reaction you want, Dan.
I tried.
You can sit there and grin all you want. Just powering through.
Yeah, power through. You got this.
But Hulk, like, they were very careful to keep the personality that he didn't want to hurt innocents, even as the Hulk. Like, he'd have times where he could go on a rampage in a city, and he'd just, like, leap away rather than hurt someone. Yeah.
Boy, does that sure not last.
Well, I think I got a little tired of Marvel's misunderstood superhero shtick between Spider-Man and the Hulk and all the rest of them.
What? They don't do that.
It got tiresome after a while. It really did. You know, and, you know, with DC, you had, I think one of the best things DC did was transition into the Dark Knight era.
That was great, because before that, it was always that their tired trope was the superhero love triangle.
Yeah, yeah, and
guy likes girl likes superhero. Superhero and guy are the same person, but can't admit it.
Yeah, yeah, that got tiresome quick. But when they decided to go over to the Dark Knight era, you know, and take sort of an older superhero, been around since the 40s, you know, and you know, stop having just this two-dimensional character doing two-dimensional things, you know, they suddenly decided that, you know, let's add some personality to this guy, you know, outside of his superhero persona. You know, he's not just the rich guy who, you know, fights against bad guys. You know, he's got a dark side of his own, and, you know, it's a question of who's the bigger villain, Batman or the Joker?
Right? Yeah.
Suddenly, you know, and you're beginning to wonder what's going on, and it gives them a lot of, as writers, it gave them a lot of latitude, as artists, it gave them a lot of latitude.
They start looking at the fact that Bruce Wayne has the wealth to solve a lot of Gotham's problems, and rather than actually solving the problems, he dresses up like a bat and beats up the mentally ill.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I've always aspired to. I mean, something that's a terrible thing to do. Terrible. But, you know, it really just... I think DC took it a little too far. I think that was one of DC's biggest problems, was when it worked for one character, they tried to do it with all of them.
That wasn't just DC. I mean, the 90s happened to every character.
Yeah. Yeah, the 90s were not good for comics.
Azrael, let's go.
Oh, God. Oh, God. No, the 90s
My favorite Batman, personally.
Really?
No, not at all.
Okay.
But... You see, normally I would have assumed not at all, but with you I can never quite be sure. Because Asriel does read like Batman if he was written by Rob Zombie.
Is Dan's picture gone for you, Bill?
No, I can see Dan. Okay, I'm very pained at your love of Asriel.
Hopefully the recording is picking him up because I can't see him.
No, I can see me. We're good.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But, I guess, Bill, take over.
Yeah, how did you get into comics, fucker?
I just buy a couple periodically until I started working at a comic shop where I had access to runs and immediately
got... really
got...
cool people.
You know who I worked for, Dan. You know that's not true.
I swear to God, it's not my fault. I heard something crashing. I went to look. Okay? It's not my fault. Yeah. I mean, if I hadn't heard it, I wouldn't have gone to check, and he'd still be down there under a pile of crap. But all I heard was a crash. I went, I looked, I rescued him. It's not my fault.
When it comes crashing down.
Throw more boxes after it.
Okay, that's completely out of context for anybody who watches this. But,
and I wasn't going to provide any explanation because it's funnier for me that way.
Yes.
And we really can't say anything without incriminating ourselves, but... This comic shop was an interesting little episode in our lives where we all ended up there at the same time. And, it was
it's almost one of those fate moments.
he had his own particular idiom when it came to running that place.
I mean, I would say so because I never applied to work there, so it really is fate.
Yeah.
The owner was just going away to go to a flea market for the weekend and wanted someone to watch the store, and he's irresponsible enough to just ask random customers who he has numbers for because they have a pull list at the store to come and, like, work in the store with no supervision.
Yeah, and you know what? I ended up in there the same way. I was a customer. I would come in and look at the movies, maybe pick up a comic or a video or something. And one day, his wife was there, and she said, well, you know, his father just passed away, and I need to run. Here's the key. Bye. And I ended up working there. I was there by myself for 2 weeks.
Yeah. I could have robbed them blind if I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I could have, too. It was the weirdest thing. It was like suddenly I had a job that I didn't want, you know, because I had a job already.
Same here. I got home because I worked for the liquor commission at the time, and I got home one day and there was this message on my phone. It's like, hi, this is the comic shop. Do you want to come work here? Yeah. And I always kind of had wanted to work in a comic shop, so I'm just like, yes.
I felt bad because it was a horrible time in this guy's life, right?
Yeah. And I still want to work in a comic shop, just not that comic shop.
Yeah, I think we're all in the same boat.
A competent one.
But I worked there for a couple of years and then left and then ended up coming back for some extra cash in my pocket. That's when I met these two things. Human beings or a...
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about us, Dan.
Not hand-drawn or photocopied. Well, okay, don't take it to heart. It's not going to happen again. But, yeah, I ended up there. And when I came back for the second run working there, Bill was there. And he and I got stuck on the Sunday shift, so we got to know each other. And decided that, you know, oh, look, it's somebody that's even stranger than I am. Wow.
Strangely, we both had that sense and we were both right.
Yeah, we really were. And then some stray human being wandered in who seemed to know more about comics than we did. So.
Some stray young kid that needed some guidance and media taste.
He wandered in and gone, please, sir, may I have some more? And so we decided to, you know, tolerate him. And here we are.
Now we have a podcast.
Now, how many years later? What, five?
Probably
six.
It might be six. Sure.
I think it's five for knowing Ryan, and yeah, like actually knowing Ryan as opposed to knowing of Ryan, because I knew of Ryan and said hi to him occasionally in passing for almost a decade. But
back when Bill played cards.
Yes, the Magic era.
Before that made Bill want to shoot themselves.
But that was mostly the boss's son.
Yeah.
No. Let's not go too deep into that.
No, but...
Yeah, we have to behave ourselves.
I just wanted to establish that point that it wasn't that I started to hate Magic, but just hated the people that played
it. That played it. Yeah.
Yes.
In that particular store.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
And really but, only one person.
Yeah, but the comic shop did benefit from my collection. I have to say, that was one of the things I did, was I was downsizing at the time. I was going through a very big change of life, and I decided the comics were part of my past. I hadn't collected in years, but I still had my collection. They were sitting in boxes on, you know, in a corner of my bedroom. They'd been there for years, and I hadn't looked at them or anything, so I just brought them in and, you know, sold them to Jim.
Adios.
Bye. I comic books.
And then Dan bought the occasional Doctor Who comic.
Yeah, still do.
Or entire box set.
Yeah.
Yet
that was DVDs,
do.
Not comics, but still.
Yeah, well, wasn't that a brilliant day? Bill, you were there that day, weren't
Yes,
you?
I was there that day.
Right, I was just bored and looking at what they had sort of in the front of the cache, and it was like, what the hell is this? And it was what, I found a half dozen or something. I was all excited. It's like, oh my God, I've got a half dozen of them. This is so great. And then I looked back down, and there was about 20 of them. And it just kept growing. And then I got the phone call from the owner's wife saying, oh, by the way, there's a whole box of Doctor Who DVDs sitting over in a corner if you want them.
Dad's like, whoa, really?
Dan needed to get a ride home that day because he couldn't carry all
I literally had three boxes full. I had almost the entire collection. Right? Let me say,
it was like every episode of Original Who plus all the movies and specials.
Yeah, almost all. I didn't have, I think I was missing maybe 10 DVDs in total. But I can remember I couldn't get them home, and she drove, the owner's wife drove me home with them because I had no way to get them back there. It was just ridiculous. There were so many of them. And I could not believe my luck. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it turned out to be a very sad story after the fact. I discovered that the collection that I was holding in my hands was a collection that I'd looked at years before. An old friend of mine had owned them and had always been very envious of his collection. He'd spent years putting it together. And it turned out he'd passed away. And his sister had brought the collection into the store to get rid of it. And, you know, I ended up with it. And, you know, I cherish it simply because it belonged to him. Because he and I had gone to school together when we were younger.
I think I might be the one who told you that.
You very well may have been. But he and I had gone to school together when we were young. And we'd always been fairly close friends. And, you know, I hadn't realized he'd passed away. We hadn't talked in a couple of years. And yeah, it was just, it was very bittersweet, you know, discovery after the fact. But yeah, so I still have them. I cherish them. I've yet to pick up any of Jody's stuff yet, but one step at a time.
Wait, I think I know who that is.
Oh, probably. He was a regular at the store.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
RIP number 65.
So, to everyone, this is me learning that someone I used to know died live on the air.
Wow. yeah. Joe Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it was him. Died right at the start of 2020.
Right. He and I had worked at the university together for years, but when I left the university, I sort of lost touch with him. And then about... I guess it wasn't 2 years. It probably about 6 months after I'd left the university, I discovered he'd passed away.
Yeah, he was friends with one of my best friend's dads. Yeah. I've known him for years.
Yeah, and that was his collection, his Doctor Who collection. Most of that limited edition director's collection that Jim had in the exotic films, that was all from Joe. That was all his stuff. Right, all the Doctor Who was his Doctor Who collection.
Yeah, I knew the person that owned those died, but I didn't know it was him.
It was a hell of a collection.
Yeah, he and I had spent years sitting back watching them. You know, we get together on Saturday afternoon, watch two or three, you know, episodes of, you know, Tom Baker or, you know, David Troughton, and, you know, just kind of hang out, have pizza, talk, watch some Doctor Who. So I'd watched most of the stuff in these collections over the years. And then when I did get the collection myself, it wasn't until after the fact that I discovered who it belonged to.
Yeah, because I didn't think it was that weird that I hadn't seen him for a while because, you know, COVID messed up everyone's contacts. I'm like, maybe he moved or something. That's why I never see him anymore. Because we were never, like, have each other's number close. He was an acquaintance of someone I knew.
Yeah.
And we'd been to a lot of parties and stuff together. And so every time we'd see each other, we'd stop and talk for, like, half an hour, 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah. He was always full of these crazy anecdotes.
Yeah,
he really was. He always had something different to talk about.
He liked to talk.
Oh, and he was funny. He was very—he's a very funny man. But like I said, he and I had gone to school together, and we'd always hung out in school, right? And we were in the same programs, and it was a very bittersweet thing to find out.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a punch in the dick.
Yeah, live on air. Let's go. Yeah.
Live on air.
But let's bring it back to light. It's something lighter with me finishing my story of how I got...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I stopped to tell mine, too, after.
Yeah, into comics. Because, like, I'd get comics periodically. I'd buy Spider-Man. Usually it was Amazing Spider-Man for, like, 6 months or so at a time. And then the store wouldn't have it for a bit.
Because it was crap.
Fall out of it and not buy any comics for, like, 5 years or so. Because this was back in the buy-off a spinner rack, like Dan said, when I was getting into comics. They still didn't really have comic shops. And then, so I started buying comics at the store we all ended up working at, and ended up working there. And got way into comics, and decided to go back and start from the beginning.
Harley Quinn? Deadpool? No, X-Men?
Yes. For context, anybody watching this, we all grew up in the middle of butt-fucking rural nowhere, right? Comic shops were something that happened in cities. They never came down our way. The province we live in has one city. Yeah, we had
two.
To come
if you're
out of
feeling
the woods
generous about
hunting.
Sydney.
Well, it's a city.
And whoever
it
is.
Yeah, but
they get city status by counting the entire fucking island.
Yeah, but I mean, we were living in areas where a comic shop was never viable. It just wasn't viable. Right. So comics or something that showed up at the rack at a drugstore, a magazine rack or something.
You know, yeah.
When we were growing up, it was just, there was no way you were ever going to have a comic shop. The only
before, you know, being able to mail order them. I mean, I'm sure you could probably get a catalog and order it to your house at great expense if you were way more hardcore into it than, you know, 12-year-old me was ever going to be.
Yeah, and it cost money back then because we're trying to get it sent from California to Canada.
You're basically paying partial prices on that, too, because they'd have to board it and, like, send it stiff or it would show up ruined.
Yeah. But, it was just something that wasn't going to happen down in this bit of nowhere. Right. You know, I mean... We'd gotten past corduroy roads. We actually had paved roads, but that was about it.
Some of them are still corduroy.
Yeah.
I have to take the Wentworth Road when I go to work regularly. I know.
There you go. That'll do it. So anyway, just for context, as to why we talk about this, comic shops didn't exist. There was one hobby store in the entire province. And that was in the city. It was Odyssey 2000. Because I used to go up there to buy D&D dice.
By the time I was getting into it, there were more hobby stores, but most of them didn't dabble in comics.
Yeah.
Because I know there used to be a comic, like a hobby store in New Minas. And then there was one in Wolfville, and I think there was one in Windsor, but none of them sold comics.
Yeah.
They were just, like, pure games and model stores. Like, they went hard into the model kits.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In Wolfville, where the shop is that we worked in, before they opened...
that was just doxed ourselves by saying the shop we worked in there. Everyone who knows Wolfville knows what it is now.
As if anybody from there is going to watch this. But before that, before he opened...
It was a matter of time before somebody slipped. It'd be Dan.
Of course.
Well, you already identified Jim's name twice in this podcast. I was trying to be vague and say the owner, and Dan's just like, so Jim...
Yeah, I know. But there was somebody else who had opened a comic shop before him. Ken Huang. I don't know if you remember Ken. Right. He's an Arsenal fan. I mean, what the hell's that all about?
He also stole a bunch of my shit when I was a kid.
Oh, did he? Oh, you told me that. Yeah, yeah.
Because I went there to play Magic, and of course I was a kid and didn't know better, so I didn't keep an eye on my cards constantly. And they suspiciously vanished one time, and it's like, from everything I've heard subsequently, it was totally Ken that took him. And then just like, I don't know, someone must have walked out with him.
Yeah. But yeah, he had a shop there first. And it never really worked. And then after he did it, I can't remember what the other guy's name was. He opened one up down in Railtown. That didn't last very long.
That was actually one of the guys that used to work for Ken.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't last long.
I think his name was Richard.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly.
Because I bought Magic cards in all of those shops.
Yeah. Yeah. And from there, suddenly we had a new comic shop, and...
The rest is history.
The rest is painful.
Yeah.
Just painful. I got stuck in these two wankers.
And now you can't get rid of us.
God, it's like syphilis, the two of them. Right, both strains, A and B. Right, Mister, I wouldn't know media if it kicked me in the ass. Mister, I wouldn't know football if it kicked me in the ass.
I mean, it doesn't kick me in the ass because we've got Harry Maguire doing it.
Oh, look, Harry scored a couple of goals recently.
Yeah, for the other team.
Still counts.
Yeah.
Right? Don't be so
hard
on
I'm sorry, I should be nicer. His mom has asked us to stop making fun of him.
That is true. And don't be so hard on Harry. You could be looking at your golden days right now, buddy. Right? You know, I'm just saying. Right? You're sitting 13th on the friggin' league, right? And you still haven't beat Burnley yet today, so. Have fun.
Oh, I will.
Right. Bill, did you want to finish?
There's not much more to say other than that I never can do things half-assed, so I very quickly started thinking...
Do you want to say that out loud again?
I mean, like, things from myself as opposed to a job.
Okay, fair enough.
I was very good at doing things half-assed when I didn't respect my boss.
Okay, thank you. Got the stories we could tell if that happened at that story.
But so I started thinking I should go back and read them from the beginning, which led to me discovering that you can do that on the internet, which led to me discovering the site ordering for all of Marvel instead of just Spider-Man, which was my original idea, was to just read all of Spider-Man.
Because he's a sucker for punishment.
And then things have ballooned out from there to now reading comics from the 1950s that are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And starting to do a complete DC read-through as well as the Marvel read-through.
So technically you're the supervillain of the crowd, forcing us to live through this horrifying period of bad comics.
I am effectively the instigator. Ryan started doing it because I was doing it.
So you're kind of Doctor Doom.
You could say that, yeah.
Right, you're dragging us through the mud with you. That's very kind of you.
And
Ryan says the Skippy, whatever, Rick Jones of the crowd.
I mean, I haven't fully embraced my villainous tendency yet. No one associated with me has ever bitten someone in an altercation.
Yeah, totally.
Well, now that Ryan is broken, they can tell us about their comic experience.
So,
yeah. Come on, Rick Jones, tell us.
Oh, that's a terrible Finn to be called.
No, I think it's incredibly appropriate. Bill, you want to weigh in on that one? Or Dr. Doom?
I guess I could have been part of the team brigade when you guys met me, so.
That's true.
Well, back in 2010, I got started by reading Archie Digest, is how I got in, technically, from the start. That's the first Finn really comic-related that I started reading. I eventually picked up single-issue Archie comics. And then when I got a little more...
the group chat.
Okay.
And then when I got a little more serious, starting to... Okay, I gotta see this now. Oh, for God's sakes. I was just named Rick Jones in our group chat, so that's nice.
You fuckers named me after Congo Bill. You deserve what you get.
Yeah.
I'll fill you in on what they decide to name me later.
I ended up becoming a big Walking Dead fan because of the TV show, and I wanted to read the fucking comics. So I started off
Walker
Patrol. Okay. So I started reading the comics by watching...
I assume, based on Ryan's media taste, that it was a Walker Texas Ranger thing, but I wasn't going to say anything.
Ow.
I started...
Ow. That was cold. Jesus, Bill. Where the hell did that come from? Jesus.
Oh, shit. Oh.
Okay, so, Rick, you keep talking. We're listening.
I started by watching YouTube videos that just had full-on rips of the comics where I had to pause every 5 to 10 seconds to read the panels. And then I was like, I actually want to buy these and read them for myself, and I jumped in. I got some issues around it. 100th issue with the big, one of the most popular films debuts. And then I got fully in around the big story arc All at War, and I just kept getting Walking Dead. And then eventually I transitioned into getting some Marvel stuff because I'd always been a Spider-Man fan, so... In 2014, when Peter Parker returned, I started getting that Amazing Spider-Man run, started getting some Jane Foster Thor, so started getting the Spider-Verse stuff that ended up being a huge hit. And yeah, so that's... It was still Marvel now, a little before Secret Wars happened, and then I really got into Marvel, and yeah, just ended up jumping hard into Marvel. And then I got dabbled into some DC and got into that a lot, and then I just... Indie comics became a thing for me, which is something we still haven't really talked about much as our indie comics ties, but I've read a lot of great indie comics, and indie comics are... I love superhero comics, but indie comics are a special form, breed.
We did go on an indies for a while with our whole talk about Dark Horse and Image. And
yeah, but I mean, like, specifically to us. I mean, specifically to us, what ones have affected us and stuff.
Well, 2000 AD certainly affected me. I'm a lot. Because
we haven't even gotten Gen 13
out
at the end yet.
Well, I thought we would, before we finish this off, we would all sort of name off some of our favorite titles.
Fair enough.
You know, from over the years that we've collected. And, there were some indie titles in there because I love Bone. You know, stuff like that.
I guess Bone would technically be the first Finn I read, but that I read that in graphic novel format, so...
Yeah.
When I was a kid, so it didn't even register.
Yeah, it was different.
At least to me, it's always felt more like an Archie Digest or so, in, like, not really a comic book thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's the comic form, but not really a comic book.
Yeah, well, it's no different.
I mean, it started out as one, but it's become more popularized as a graphic novel.
Yeah,
like heavy metal when it became a thing was I was sort of around in the heyday of heavy metal in the 80s when it was just the most popular thing out there, and it was technically a magazine, not a comic, but it was, you know, to me it was just a fancy comic.
Yeah, I mean, there were an awful lot of magazines that were just fancy comics as a way to get around the comic code.
Yeah, and heavy metal was doing stuff that you weren't getting anywhere else. You know, the art, the stories, everything about it was just so different and so unique. I just loved it. But, Ryan, what are your favorite titles?
Well,
let's go there. Let's go there, Ryan.
I used to like Amazing Spider-Man, but that's kind of fallen off, huh? In recent years, that's fallen off a little bit, if I do say so myself.
Dan Slott.
No, actually, Dan Slott's been looking real good nowadays.
Is it worse?
It's worse.
I stopped reading Dan Slott because I fucking hated him.
I enjoyed Dan Slott's run more than you, to be fair. But yeah. To be honest, the Parker International stuff was the weakest part of his run, but it still was decent.
And to be clear, I didn't hate his writing. I just didn't think it was good for Spider-Man. It felt like they were trying to make him Iron Man, and Iron Man already existed, so that was my main issue with it.
Yeah, that's a fair complaint, too. There's so many good titles I've read.
Yeah, that's the thing with me, too. It's like, what do I pick for my favorites?
Bone is still one of my all-time favorites. I love that I love that story. I just said it was more popularized in graphic novel form, but it did start off as a comic. I love that series.
Maybe instead of focusing, we should, like, break down what our favorites are to make it a little more focused, like favorite indies, favorite Marvel, and favorite DC.
Let's stick to favorites just, as we collect it.
Yeah. Let's just list random ones, whatever comes to us. Like, I love Archie stuff still. I mean, I don't read it anymore, but Archie stuff's always had a deep place in my heart, so.
Yeah, I've had a huge, huge, huge love affair with Dark Horse's running series of Alien miniseries.
Those are always good.
I love the Newt's Tale, stuff like that. It was just fantastic.
I absolutely loved Rat Queens until they fucked it up when the writer got sick.
Yeah.
Because they built to this cliffhanger, the writer got sick, and it didn't get written for a while. And when they came back, it was just a soft reboot.
Yeah, I loved...
Everything was dropped, they never resolved the cliffhanger, and just... It wasn't the same.
Yeah.
But I've read those first 12, 13 issues, whatever it was, so many times.
Yeah, I own the first volume or two, and it was
a good
story.
It's the first two volumes, and then it falls apart. Because they were gone for a year, and when they came back, they just... started over because I think they didn't want to pick up on a cliffhanger that no one remembered.
Titles I loved, obviously Teen Titans, I mentioned it already. Yeah. I just loved the reboot of Teen Titans. And I loved the sort of the soft reboot of Legion of Superheroes.
Tales of the New Teen Titans.
Yeah, but the Legion of Superheroes, when they, like you say, there's sort of a soft reboot on it, and it was so friggin' good. Just loved it. Never missed an issue. Right? Yeah. I love the Phantom from Carlton. I loved Warlord from DC. Mike Grell's Warlord was really good. You know, there was titles like that. And again, I keep saying it, Brave and the Bold was just everything to me. You know, a lot of the time. I couldn't wait for the next issue to come out.
Jason Aaron's Thor run wasn't one of the best fins I've ever read. I had a little bit of a weak stretch going on the end stretch, but it redeemed itself for the actual end. But that's what the fucking Love and Thunder movie's based off of, and doesn't do justice. I haven't even watched it yet, but it doesn't do it justice. That fucking comics run was so fucking good, went for 7.5 years, was awesome, and deserved so much better than whatever that movie produced.
I gotta say, for the big two comic companies and stuff they actually collected, my absolute favorites were Harley Quinn for DC and Squirrel Girl for Marvel.
Oh, yeah, both epic titles.
Fucking
epic
love titles. Squirrel Girl. Yeah, I think that's Squirrel still Girl my had favorite good momentum comic
for a while.
I haven't read anything since they changed the creative team, and I'm kind of scared to.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be sort of in when Judge Dredd became a thing, and it was such a unique and different experience to read something like that, and I just lived for it. Just loved every second of it.
I've never read a Judge Dredd.
It's a very different experience.
Do not judge it by the movies either.
No, well, Dredd, the latest Carl Urban's Dredd, is an excellent film.
It's good, but it still doesn't really hit the feel of the comic.
No, it doesn't have the feel of the comic.
Like, it's not a good way to know what the comic Judge Dredd is.
Yeah. The comic Judge Dredd was just so different from anything else that was out there. And it was fun.
Another title I should share with that was that kind of like a Walking Dead where I read some of it online through YouTube and stuff before I ever even collected it was Ultimate Spider-Man. That was a special title. Started in 2000. The start of the millennia. They started out that Ultimate Universe. Spider-Man carried the Ultimate Universe for a lot of it. Really fantastic stuff.
That's kind of been the same thing. Spider-Man 2099 carried the 2099 franchise largely too. Even though it wasn't nearly as good as Ultimate Spider-Man, but it was still easily the best thing in the 2099 universe.
Brian Michael Bendis was a great writer in the 2000s and 2010s. Some of the 2010s and stuff was doing some great work. Mark Bagley was the artist until the Miles Morales era, where Sarah Pacelli took over and gave us Miles Morales and Miles Morales rules.
Objectively, the best Spider-Man, and by objectively, I mean my opinion, which is the only one that matters.
Oh, of course.
Miles is kind of my favorite too, you know, but it's hard to say that when Peter's been around for so long. And
see, the reason I like Miles is because modern Miles feels like early Peter.
Yeah.
Much more than modern Peter. Like, that's what I want from the comic.
With the Ultimate stuff, also, probably my favorite comic stuff is the death of Ultimate Comics Peter Parker, even though they end up going back on it. But I love that, how that's written. It feels like a real-life death that it realistically would happen, and the tragedy of Aunt May losing their nephew is fantastic.
I mean, if we're doing comic deaths for me, and this isn't something that I was collecting, this is before I was even born, but for me, the best comic death will always be Gwen Stacy.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Because that changed the industry.
Yeah. It did.
And the way they handled it with the sound effects was brilliant. Like, instead of the big flamboyant lettering of sound effects you get, it's a tiny little cracking sound. And it's one of the most devastating things in comics.
Oh, I don't know. I think Joker beating Robin to death with a crowbar was pretty...
I mean, that's good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but that was shitty Robin important. That no one liked.
The fans literally voted on his death.
Yeah, I don't think you can really call it a tragedy when the fans voted for it to happen.
Well,
They wrote it well, but it's like, you want this. It's not sad.
Yeah, it was quite the death.
Name a more iconic duo of Robin and the crowbar.
Stay out of this, Devin Storm.
I think it's been an interesting journey, I think, as far as comics go.
I think also, just for me, I have to shout out the event Maximum Carnage. Even though it's not considered a great event, it hit at the right age for me. That it, more than probably anything else, is what got me into comics, because I was just at the right age where this was like the coolest thing ever.
Well, a complete aside here, Bill. You're 13 minutes in and you're not losing yet. just so you know.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Comics are a magical form of entertainment. A magical
They become a rite of passage since the '50s. For most people, they've read comics at some point in their life. And I don't mean the ones in the newspapers. I mean proper comics. They've read them at some point. Right. You know, growing up, comics were just something that was just part of your life.
Yeah. Although I do think that rite of passage is ending now.
It is simply because of the media age. Comics are something you see on the screen now.
I think a big thing, too, was the fact that they're no longer sold in the corner store.
Yeah, like they're not early.
You have to actually go to a comic shop now to buy comics.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't, so they just never get the exposure that you had when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, your parents are at the grocery store buying groceries, and they pick up an Archie Digest.
Well, because comic shops have a stigma.
Cash rack. Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're losing that stigma because being a nerd isn't viewed nearly as bad anymore.
They've been losing that stigma for a few years now.
It's still you have to specifically go there, so kids have to already be interested. So now it feels like the rite of passage is the MCU and the DCEU. And some people that like those movies will then go and buy the comics to see what they were, whereas before people would buy the comics and maybe watch a movie if it came out.
Yeah, when's the last time you heard somebody say, hey, honey, let's go to the comic shop to get a Green Lantern comic?
I mean, well, you're already going into unbelievable because there's a honey involved. I mean, some elements of nerd culture haven't changed.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Oh. Oh shit.
Yeah, whatever you say, Rick Jones. you're stuck with that now.
Unfortunately.
At least until I think of something else funny to call him.
Yeah. But yeah, Rick Jones I think is the perfect choice for him right now. You're just the epitome thereof. You follow the big boys around.
I mean, the old name was pretty close, too, because I had named him Al Pratt after the original Adam when I was trying to give us all DC, terrible DC names.
No, you see, I thought it was just a Pratt.
No, it was Al Pratt, the original Adam.
Oh, okay, because I was totally good with him being a Pratt. That's exactly how I saw him. Right? I've never seen Clark with Orange. I've never seen any movie worth watching.
Well, no, that's not true. They've seen some movies that are worth watching.
Only because
they just didn't like them.
If you did, yeah, only because we threatened to kill him if he didn't watch them.
Yeah, exactly. And then he didn't like it.
Yeah, I haven't figured that out.
Big Trouble in Little China really isn't that good.
Oh, you rat. it's a classic.
You guys keep bowling me. I'm just going to go read some Scribbly after this.
Yeah, I might go read some Freak Brothers just to cleanse my soul.
Oh, shit.
But anyway, I think we're done with this.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much reached our point.
Yeah, we're all a little winded, but...
We covered a lot of topics and a lot of square footage, so...
Yeah.
Pretty good. Oh God, that looks.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, before Bill tries to get me to read anything that's terrible, let's get out of here. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please do like, subscribe, comment, even share if you'd like to. We're also available, of course, on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. There's not going to be any poll on this Spotify, so I guess. I'll put the question on the Spotify of what's a comic that you've loved? What's your favorite comic? We covered a lot of square footage today, why we all love comics, how we got into it, how we met each other. Comics have been very important to all of us, and are how we got here, how we got to doing this fucking podcast, and becoming podcasters.
My buddy wants to know who the most misunderstood superhero is.
the most misunderstood superhero.
Yeah. Ragman.
That's a hard question, actually.
Come on.
I'm torn on whether to go for a sarcastic answer or a genuine one.
Huh? Gru.
I don't think he counts as a superhero.
Ow. That's cold.
Gru's awesome, but it's not really a superhero comic.
The silence reigns.
Yeah, I don't have anything. I can't
it's
even.
It's very
the
hard.
Hulk?
That's hard the on the spot.
Yeah.
I think probably
General Thunderbolt Ross.
I'm gonna give an honest answer.
Okay.
I think it's the Punisher.
The Punisher.
Okay, that's
they had
that's
to
good
change
shout.
His logo because so many dumbasses didn't get what that comic was about.
Yeah,
they don't use the skull logo anymore because the fucking alt-right Renault fucking
they've
fuckers
ruined it. They've put multiple times in the comics where he calls people out who think he's a good guy and think he's like an aspirational character.
Yeah. I remember when Maury was younger and she had the Punisher logo pin that she used to wear.
Punisher rules.
Punisher's awesome, but he's not a good guy. He's not a good person.
Well, not as
you should understand that if you're reading the comics.
Yes, but the alt-right struggles with media literacy. They think Tyler Durden is aspirational, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the alt-right is just a whole different friggin' animal.
There's a whole genre of comedy of the alt-right loving media properties that are actually directly opposed to what they like, but they don't understand the message of the media.
Yeah, they're completely missing the point because they're not willing to delve into it deeper.
Rage Against the Machine.
Understand it.
Oh, yeah, and I'm getting furious about Rage Against the Machine suddenly being political. This is a band that name-dropped Fred Hampton in 1992.
Yeah. Anyway.
In context, they didn't just say the name. They mentioned him being murdered by the police.
Yeah.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know, Fred Hampton was a member of was a Black Panthers activist that was killed by the police in his apartment.
Welcome to America.
Welcome to. We gave you some history lessons today too, and we were on the way out, and we'll go back to being there.
Yes.
We will see you all next week for another regular episode of the podcast. We decided to just do this one this week because of time constraints. Bill and I are planning to do a wrestling stream for WCW, so which this should be uploaded first before that still, so I'll still shout out that. Stay tuned. Our top drawn series. we will see you all next time. Good talk, and peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.